Alderman Merrick on Zoom, Chief Jensen, Deputy Chief Mikulasek, and Marlis, the records taker. Do we have any citizen comments on tonight's agenda? There's no one here in City Hall, and I don't see anyone on Zoom. Take that as a no. We have the minutes from our August 12th, 2021 meeting for approval. Does anyone have any comments, questions, or concerns on the minutes as presented?
Look good to me.
Yeah, so those will be accepted as presented. We are going to make an amendment to the agenda this evening. We're going to move PS 2021-25, item number 3, to the top of the list so we can get the presentation by Deputy Chief Mikulasek on the department's body cameras. So anytime you're ready, ready to go ahead.
So I'll start out real quick, and then I'm going to turn everything over to Ray. Just a couple key points with this. The body camera program is obviously going to be statutory. With the police reform bill, body cameras are coming, whether we want it or not. The due date of that obviously depends on the size agency and the population you have for your city. This is something that our PD is, I have zero people in this PD that will say they don't want it. So for us, it's about protecting. And I kind of gave you an example earlier about a complaint coming in. It was a pretty serious crime with the female victim. And when that victim comes in and recants and says certain things didn't happen, but the audio that we have shows that it did, it's just one way for us to make sure we protect our people, number one. But we could also utilize that in court, number two, to help prosecute and help the state's attorney prosecute. So it's for us, it's extremely important. There are limitations with body cameras, and I know Ray is going to go over a bunch of that. The body camera only sees what the body camera sees. It's not going to be the full vision of what an officer would see because there's not periphery. The body camera goes out, and depending on what the width of that eye that goes out and the video screen that it catches, it's not going to see. If it only goes out this direction here, it's not going to see anything further over. And in some cases, it may see better than what an officer's eyes would see because of lighting and different things. So there's going to be some things that I know Ray is going to talk about, but I think it's important to really get some of that out. This is not the end-all, be-all, but it's important and definitely a tool we can use. So I'm going to turn it over to Ray. And all yours.
All right, everyone, hear me? Good? Good. All right, so as Chief Jensen just stated, we are going to be required by statute to have body cameras by January 1, 2025, based on our population size. Our goal is to implement them before then. It's a program we believe in strongly for accountability, transparency, for the same reasons that Chief Jensen just gave. We believe it's important. So. Two of the exhibits that were given to you beforehand were the IML officer-worn body camera fact sheet and the body-worn camera sample policy. So I'll briefly touch on these. If anybody has any questions, you can ask me in the moment. You can save them later. Either way is fine with me. It doesn't matter to me. So if you notice in the fact sheet, I just want to kind of hit some of these highlights here. These are some of the big key points, and you'll find these in policy as well. Because the sample policy is statute driven. Some of the big general requirements are cameras must be equipped with pre-event recording, capable of recording at least 30 seconds prior to camera activation. So this is obviously when we're looking at body cameras, this is something we have to be aware of, is that we're purchasing a product that is capable of meeting these requirements, right? So obviously tonight I'll be talking about the watch guard system, and I'll explain why. But it meets these requirements. In fact, the body camera system with in 1080p, I believe, will record up to 25 hours beforehand. It's in a passive recording mode at all times. If it was in 720, it'll do, I believe, 50 hours, I think was the number they had given me. So, this thing's always recording. Whether you're going to get audio with that, it's dependent on how the settings are set. The more things you have activated, the less time you're going to get past recording. But obviously more than meets the 30 seconds are requirement. Cameras must be capable of recording for a period of at least 10 hours. The camera option we're looking at is this WatchGuard V300. Like I said, I'll get into that later. That has a detachable battery, and it also has a charger cord that the officer can charge inside their squad car while they're driving their squad cars. It's magnetic, so if they jump out, it'll detach without ripping any equipment out or breaking anything. So it meets the 10 hours. The cameras, obviously, they'll give officers warning if they're reaching, getting close to a battery life, where they need to be concerned and switch out batteries. You know, obviously, working 12-hour shifts. How are you on here and there? So, sorry. So, obviously, with 12-hour shifts, we need to be able to meet that requirement. And, obviously, sometimes we have officers that are going to have to hold over for calls, and so they will be able to switch out batteries or charge as they go, so that won't be an issue. And then the main thing, you know, officers have to have the cameras on at all times when they're engaging in law enforcement activities. Some things I'll talk about, there is some language they're trying to clean up in this bill. A lot of things are pretty vague. One of the areas they're looking to clean up is they're looking for a more specific definition of a law enforcement related activity. There is in the statute a definition right now. I mean, it's pretty wide encompassing. I mean, we're looking at anything that an officer responds to a call for service, you're going to have that camera. And then I'll touch, you know, about SRO stuff. There's some things that have to be worked out, but, you know, obviously this is a work in progress for everyone as everyone starts to implement these programs. So the good thing is everybody's kind of going through it together, so we kind of learn lessons learned from each other. So. But as long as we're following statute, we're good to go.
So if someone's just sitting right in the radar, it doesn't need
to be. In fact, you don't have to have your camera on, your body camera, if you're in your squad car and your in-car camera is activated. But as soon as you exit the car to re-engage in a law enforcement-related activity, the body camera has to come right back on. So, record keeping, we must retain everything for 90 days. If it is not flagged in the system, and there's a whole list of calls in statute that have to be flagged, then everything will come out of the system after 90 days. The items that are flagged have to stay in the system for at least 2 years. There's some things, obviously, that are probably retained forever based on, you know, whatever that case may be. So obviously that's in policy. And one of the things I learned, and I'll tell you right now, I went to a training that the Illinois Chiefs put on last Monday with a lot of agents. This says it's ended. The Zoom meeting ended. Are you guys aware?
Yeah, I see it too.
All right.
You should take it with me.
Yeah, I can stop.
I'll try to get it back. Has another meeting in progress. You get the same thing.
This host will let me resume. Turn the server on.
There it goes. Matt, can you hear us? Okay.
There you go.
Welcome back. All right, so as I was stating, the general requirements and record keeping, we're going to talk about the 90-day retention, 2 years. Reporting is another big one. We have to report to Illinois Law Enforcement Training Standards Board. By before May 1st of each year. There's a whole list of requirements in this fact sheet of the things that have to be in that report. And then I think one of the other big items in here is FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. There are very specific spelled out requirements for what we have to report in FOIA. And basically, if the person's not involved in the call or it's not a like a use of force or something of that nature, we don't have to necessarily provide the video to the person. So that is spelled out pretty clearly of what the provisions are of what we can and don't have to release. So where that's important, I know some agencies I knew that would try to implement body cameras 5-6 years ago, and they didn't have these FOIA provisions. They had to hire an extra person just to do FOIA requests because there's so many of them. So this, I think the spirit of this part of the statute is to make sure we're not inundated with every interaction being a FOIA request, right? So those are kind of the highlights of the fact sheet. Does anybody have any questions of anything on that as far as, it's kind of a highlight of the statute and the program.
One of the ways that the law was written, and it's one of the only laws that I have seen, and I don't know about Ray, but they actually kind of bulleted point certain parts of the body camera law. So when Ray's going over the policy is pretty much taking, or the sample policy is pretty much taken from what the statute is. I don't know if I've ever seen a statute written kind of like the body camera law is written, which is actually a good thing. So.
So the next exhibit that you're given beforehand is the sample policy. Where I took this policy from, I just kind of created it as a combination. I took policies I got from Evanston Police Department. Sorry, the city made me throw off the college. Evanston Police Department, Elgin Police Department, and then the Kendall County Sheriff's Department and Montgomery Police Department, who both already had body camera programs that they have actively employed. So I kind of took some things I liked from all the different policies, and then I went through and made sure that we're still following along with the statute. This is just a sample, so there's probably some things that may change that have to be cleaned up. I know there's trailer bills that are supposed to go to the General Assembly this spring, so there may be more changes. I know they're looking for some more language changes to this body camera portion of the new bill. So some of the highlights, I think, if you look at the spirit of the legislation and the policy, is a lot of it has to do with what officers have to record, what they don't have to record, and specifically tagging and labeling. This training went to last week where it was kind of a roundtable thing with some agencies. That Elgin was one of them. Their chief enacted a body camera program about 5 years ago. So one of the things they talk about is tagging, and that's an issue because they don't want an officer to tag their own video and then tag it as something that's going to be expelled from the system in 90 days when it's something that should have been kept for 2 years, right? Like playing with the names on a tag to try to get something thrown out of the system that they know is going to get them in trouble, a potential get in trouble. So that's kind of the spirit of it. As far as the recording, as I said, there's some language issues that people are looking for clarification on. Particularly expectation of privacy. The chief of Elgin, the way she had described it, is they treat it as if you call the police, you don't have an expectation of privacy. I don't know that we're quite there, but the victim, in fact, has an opportunity to ask the officer to turn off the camera. And then the officer captures that on the camera, and now we have the victim saying, please don't record me on this, or an informant, a witness, whatever it may be. They may request for privacy purposes to turn it off. Whether you do or not, you know, I don't know what issue it is afterwards. There's always ways to redact, there's ways to lock things. The way the law enforcement misconduct statute that was created is written is it's described to me that you're probably be more in more trouble for turning off a video than for not turning it on at the right time. Does that make sense? So, that's where you're going to get officers in a spot, is sometimes it might be better to just leave it running and worry about redacting something later. But these are issues we're going to, you know, flesh out well before implementation, is to make sure we're on point with those. So, you know, we do end up in a lot of people's homes. You know, we'll figure that part out. And I think, again, as I talk about other agencies, we're all going to learn from each other, you know, what's working, what's not working, and then, of course, follow along the statute. So. Those are kind of, to me, the important highlights of the policy. Does anybody have any questions as you looked over the policy of anything in there. Obviously, like I said, you know, some of the things touched in, we talked about recording. One other thing I probably should mention is officer privacy. So one thing that was talked about is sometimes officers go to the bathroom and forget to turn the thing off, and some things get captured they wish wouldn't have been captured. So some suggestions are, you know, signs in front of the bathroom, hey, when you go in here, don't forget to turn the camera off. And when you're coming out, hey, don't remember to turn the camera back on, or whatever the case may be. Suggestions they had is that it just gets reported to the administrator, which would probably be a deputy chief or something, you know, some other administration role. And they can just lock that video so no one else can see it. And then after 90 days, just purge it from the system, and that embarrassing video is now gone. There also is language in the policy that would allow the administrator to delete that video right off the bat because it doesn't have any value for police, you know, law enforcement reasons. So those are things that I would want to get clarification on, because some things that might be in the sample policy might be pre-new statute. So there was different rules for body cameras in the last 5 years. And they even mentioned a lot of the statutes pre-2015. So those are some language areas where I would want to be sure to clean up before full implementation. So. And obviously we run everything past the city attorney and everybody else. So.
Great.
Yes, go ahead.
When it comes to the SROs, mm-hmm. you guys coordinate with the schools about how they want the cameras used?
Yes.
Or are they subject to the... they're subject to the statute, but do they have their own guidelines on how they want them implemented in school?
That's a good question, Dan. So that was brought up, and in your hospitals are another area where there's major privacy concerns. And as far as hospitals, you have to be engaged in law enforcement activity. With the schools, it's the same thing. We're required to record a law enforcement activity, but it's that gray area in between where you're just doing your community caretaking, you're talking to a student about an issue, just your regular everyday interactions. Those are things we would not be recording. There's no reason to. We're not required by statute to record them. But some of the suggestions that came out of this training was to make sure you sit down with the school district ahead of time and you work out agreements and everyone's on the same page of what's going to be recorded and what's not. And that helps the messaging on their end, because parents are obviously going to be concerned about officers and body cameras, right? Mm-hmm. So for messaging purposes, you all get on the same page. You're all in agreement what's going to be recorded, what's not. That's the proper way to go forward with it. So we would definitely get to that point in the school district.
We're hoping the training bill is going to cover some of that, you know, especially schools.
Okay.
And I did include a school resource officer portion in the policy and a detective, because they are, you know, this is generally geared towards patrol, but these are officers of ours that are going to engage in law enforcement activities, and they have different jobs, they have different roles, so it's important we spell out, and obviously this language may change before then, but at least we have a starting point of what that language might look like. So when we implement, we're already kind of halfway there, right?
Do you guys have to wear them?
We don't have to wear them, but some chiefs in administration don't have one at all, and some carry it in their pocket just in case. As long as we're not involved in a law enforcement activity, which I can't remember last time I was involved in a law enforcement activity.
I've made traffic stops.
I have not in a long time, and so like at BISBU, I was directing traffic. That's not considered a law enforcement activity unless something were to happen during that point that became a situation that would be deemed a law enforcement activity. If I stopped a car and took enforcement action, or there was a fight I got involved in, whatever. So there's probably situations where we might want to carry one on us just in case, because we've already put ourselves out there. We're exposing. In my office, I'm not likely to have anything happen all day, right? To be honest.
But you'll have it available if
right.
something happens.
Right. And so that's the point, is to buy enough where they're available for everyone. Okay.
So the board meeting, I would have one on me. It just wouldn't be recorded. Somebody comes in and causes problems. Somebody comes in, they have a weapon, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. It's as quick as me hitting the button and then doing what you have to do, because I would be engaged in law enforcement duties at that point.
Right.
So there's a lot of things in this that didn't get worked out when it was written. Like board meetings is one of them.
Right.
So.
And that is some of the language that they're looking to clean up, is what about administration? What part of their job? Do they have to have one fastened all the time, or can they just carry it with them when they need it, right? So these are some of the issues they're hoping to get cleaned up in a trailer bill, for sure. Thanks for asking, because that is a big one. And our goal is to have enough cameras that if everybody on duty, we look at our biggest events, hometown days. We want to make sure everybody working the street and everybody at the festival including us, because we're out now in the public in uniform, could end up in a law enforcement related activity. Not including just walking around a festival and, you know, greeting people. That doesn't count. But if something were to happen, we have to be able to activate our camera too. Yeah. Yes.
So that brings up a really good point: is, you know, special events when you get to your absolute maximum capacity of law enforcement activity.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, what you try to do with any type of material that you have for any organization is you have the capacity you need for your responsible everyday operations.
Right.
To go to the extreme to have one for everyone at your peak event, it's kind of like when you're putting in parking spaces for Christmas as compared to the 364 days of the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense. Has there been any discussion with the trailer bill to address that? Because we get into a cost of having a dozen extra cameras or a small PD. We could have extra cameras sitting that don't get used except maybe once a year.
Right.
It's an expense issue. I'm okay with having the cameras on people, but it seems to be getting to the point of we're going to the absolute extreme in that instance.
Right. Well, your first point, no, I haven't heard of that being addressed in any language. But to the point of having them available, we're talking about planned events that we know are coming, right? We could have a homicide or some other major event where we have to call a bunch of people in and we have to have the cameras available. So, like a lot of things in our job, it's the unplanned stuff that sometimes jumps up and gets you. Is you gotta be ready for that unplanned thing.
And that's the challenge, because we're trying to go to the absolute extreme,
right,
of what's the most. And then, does that include community service officers who are sworn, who are just on as part-time? They are not required.
They're not sworn.
They're not sworn.
They're civilian staff. They're civilian staff. They don't perform law enforcement.
So as long as they are not our sworn officers, they're not required.
Correct.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to make sure of that. And then the other one thing I had an issue with and concern was, if we could go back, was the administrator of the data. So officers are not tagging their own material.
That's my understanding, that you're not supposed to tag your own. So there's a difference between tagging and labeling. They can label things to mark certain spots of interest for them on in certain spots of the video, but they cannot tag the official title of that video, which doesn't allow them to mislabel it, mistag it, to allow it to be purged early so that they don't have to worry about it.
So a label is just their marking and indicator of what just happened.
Right, here's an important spot on here that I need to remember for my report.
And is this done on the fly, or is it done within the shift at some point?
I believe it's done during the review process.
Okay,
so it'll
be done after a minute.
They will be able to pull up the video, unless there are certain circumstances where they're not allowed to review their video, and that is if they're involved in a use of force of death and great bodily harm. There's statutory reasons where an officer will not be able to view the video to do their report.
That goes then and get escalated.
It goes in a special category, and it has to be reviewed by a sergeant or a supervisor of some sort first, and probably most likely administration, and then they'll be allowed to view it later. And that's in there to make sure that there's protections that the officer's not deleting the video or redacting parts of it or whatever the case may be.
You got another set of eyes on it. Because that was my thought, was if we have another person doing it, fortunately I heard that we are not subject to the same FOIA laws on this piece for the cameras.
Correct.
But how much time is it going to take someone else to do review, tag, and manage the system? Is it within the capacity of current staff, or does it mean additional staffing over time?
So I will get into some of that. Because there's ways, if based on cloud-based internal servers, that cut down on time making disks, which frees somebody up to do something else. But I can tell you, on average, I am told that 1 minute of video takes approximately 3 to 4 minutes time to redact per 1 minute of video. So, you know, if you're redacting an hour-long video, it's going to take 3 to 4 hours to redact it. The positive thing is, talking to agencies that are doing this now, they don't get a lot of FOIA requests, and they don't get a lot of redactions. It's very minimal. So, you know, could you have a really bad week where it needs a lot of time? Yes, potentially, I suppose.
Some of it's going to be we're flying by the seat of our pants when it comes to the example you're giving, Chris. I don't have an answer because I just don't know. You know, when we get into the tagging of the video, obviously if we have a use of force that we're going to review, we review all of those anyway. And that's where the administration would look into it, either Garrett or Ray, and they would get into it. They would make sure that that video is number one there, number two tagged appropriately. And the way we do pass on, we always review pass on, kind of look at what's there. So we should pretty well know as the administration what we did the night before as to whether or not body camera footage needs to be tagged. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So some of it, we're just going to be flying by the seat of our pants, unfortunately.
That's what happens when you write a bill at 3 o'clock in the morning and present it and pass it.
Yes. And you know what? As a smaller agency, it's harder to slip stuff past. You know, if you're Chicago PD and you're employing 13,000 body cameras, you know, it's probably easier for an officer to go and manipulate something. It's a little more difficult to get away with it here. It really is.
To the turning it on and off, our officers already have the audio, so they are turning that on and off as necessary at times.
Yes.
So to flip the switch, they're somewhat already experienced with that.
Yes.
Or setting another device.
Mm-hmm. So the body camera will act as the audio for the in-car video camera system. So when Ray's going to talk about WatchGuard, mm-hmm. and why WatchGuard, because it's kind of a sole source thing for us, that's one of the key components, is not having to have a separate microphone, because the body cam is that microphone for both.
Mm-hmm. So when they're already doing the, I need to let you know we're recording audio, now it's going to be, we're notifying you that we're recording audio and video.
Right.
Correct.
I'm just going to walk into the house and say, I'm recording.
We're recording.
Done. It's all I have to say.
Just a little bit.
It's actually, if you look in here in some of the language, I believe it was in the policy, as long as it's in a conspicuous location, it's obvious, there's leeway for not notifying someone to be recorded too, because you're not secretly recording. It's right here on your chest. So that's one of the considerations too. And you know, somebody brought up a good point, is most of the public thinks after this bill was passed, and even before that, that we're recording everything they do anyway. They already believe that. They think every agency has body cameras already, you know. And you'd be surprised when people are shocked to find out we don't. So that's just the nature of the beast as far as that goes. So I think obviously we're kind of getting to that point in our civilization where, Dan talked about earlier, it's just everything's recorded anymore. And I think it's just going to get to that point where people just understand that after enough police interactions, and the officers will become second nature to notify people, right? So, but it's not a death sentence if you don't notify them.
You guys are recording now anyway with your spot cameras. And you don't have to tell them you're recording.
No.
So when you pull over someone for DUI,
correct,
the camera's running, the mic's on.
Right.
You don't have to say it, just so you know. Right. If I get you out of the car between these fields, we're recording.
Yeah, there's no expectation of privacy on the street. Now, going into somebody's home, there's an expectation of privacy, but again, all I have to do is say, hey, I'm recording, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, if they say turn it off, well, you got to turn it off. That's no different than this body.
There is some leeway for the officer with exigent circumstances. If there's a situation, the officer says, even though you asked me to turn this off, I can't turn this off because of what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Remember, they're calling us there for a reason. And they may say, I don't want you filming in my home. Well, I can't not record what's going on right now. And so the officer's able to make that call. And again, like I said, we can always redact stuff later if need be, if it turns out to be something that we didn't want to capture on the camera, right? So I think there's some leeway in there, which is nice, because the original bill, there wasn't a lot of leeway. It was, if you're not recording something, you're going to prison. So thank God they fixed that one. Anybody have any questions on policy? Any further questions? Sure.
Say an off-duty officer, for whatever reason, has to get involved in an enforcement action. I'm assuming he's not walking around in his civics with a camera.
No.
Is there anything in the law that holds him responsible for,
the law specifically addresses uniformed police officers engaging in law enforcement activity. Off-duty officers, if they were to engage in something of their own choice, are not required to have a body camera. They're really not held to any new standard.
Obviously, I just didn't know if there was, you know, some action that could be taken against, you know.
Sure. No, that's an excellent question, Stephen. Thanks. Yeah. And those are questions our officers are going to be asking, too. So that's why it's important it's in the policy, is they understand, you know. It has to be crystal clear what your expectation is and when you're supposed to be recording, right? And I think that's the most important part.
Stay away from getting involved in an enforcement.
Yeah, you're off to me.
I'm off to me. Is that what you're saying, Stephen?
I'm assuming CPAC guys got to have the cameras on, too, right?
No.
Well, actually, there's got to be some changes to
that. Is that cannabis?
The bill actually does not designate that undercover narcotics.
And the trailer bill does.
Yeah, the trailer bill is. Yeah.
But when they wrote the original?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, brilliant.
Yeah. So.
It's hard to be undercover with a big camera in your chest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't mind me, this is my call box. You can call my mom for a ride home.
Well, it's the device, the life star when you fall down.
Right. Just talking to it. I've fallen and I can't get up.
I was going to say that.
All right, so any more questions on policy? Anything? If you come up with anything else that you thought of, just feel free to ask me. So I want to get into the watch guard system and why we chose it, some of the features and everything else. So currently we use WatchGuard as our in-car camera system. WatchGuard was purchased by Motorola, and since they've taken over, we've never really had any issues with WatchGuard, but it's getting even better as a major company has taken over and continues to improve the system. Obviously compatibility, we already have the in-car cameras, like I said, so we're able to sync the body cameras to the in-car cameras. So they're gonna be run at the same time. You flip on your lights, your in-car camera comes on, your body camera comes on. And they're synced in real time together. So if you're watching the backseat video, the video out the front of the car, and the body camera, they're all going to be running at the same time, which is a good feature to have. Familiarity, obviously we're familiar with the system. We have been using WatchGuard in-car cameras for years. An important thing to note is that the training I went through, both the chief of Elgin Police Department and the chief of Vernon Hills, both had the same advice. Make sure that you have the same vendor for your in-car camera as you do for your body camera. Elgin had two separate vendors, and from the problems they've had, they are now switching over to make sure they have the same, and it's costing them money to make sure they have the same vendors for in-car cameras and body cameras because of the issues they had. So, WatchGuard also, one of the reasons is the evidence library that they offer, and that'll be the last thing I'll cover in the features here. And then redaction software will allow us to redact all the videos that come through body camera, in car, everything else. And obviously, redaction is something we've been looking at for a long time now, and trying to find a system that works for us that is, you know, isn't too terribly expensive and does what we need it to do and has an ease of use. You don't want somebody to just rack their brains all day trying to figure out how to use this redaction thing, and it eats up all their time, like you said. You know, how much time is this going to take?
One of the nice things is we can, in theory, we should be able to use the redaction software even in the new building or even in the current building with any video we may have. We should be able to use the redaction software for that as well. So, in theory.
So, WatchGuard body camera features. It allows you to set your delete times, right? Now, most of these are statutory, so it's going to be 90 days minimum. But you can have certain types of calls that you just set it, and at 90 days, it's going to automatically purge it if it doesn't fit this other criteria. Or an administrator or supervisor hasn't gone in and tagged it to make sure it's kept in that two-year category, correct? Record after the fact, you touched on that. We're talking about this thing is in passive mode, recording all the time, and so you can get hours upon hours prior to the incident of video, you can recover it later, which we've done with our in-car cameras. Our in-car cameras have a larger memory, so they go back a little farther. Sometimes I think we can get to sometimes over 3 days on our in-car cameras. We can go back from the incident, and it was passive recording that whole time. The body cameras, because they're smaller and have a smaller amount of memory, they're 50 gigabytes. You can't go back quite as far, but possibly up to 25 hours beforehand. So that's kind of a big deal, but obviously well exceeds statutory requirements. In-car microphone no longer needed. Right now, our officers have to pull this in-car microphone out, put it on their body. It's kept in a charger to keep it charged all the time. We do have issues. Sometimes officers, you know, you get into a hot call and they don't think to grab that in-car mic out. This body camera replaces the in-car mic, and so now that it's worn on them at all times, we don't have to worry about those issues where we didn't, weren't able to record something we wanted to record. It's fastened to their body. So the space that removed is where the cradle will go for the body camera. If they, while they're driving, they want to detach it and sit in the charger, if that's what they want to do, they can. But they don't have to. Like I said, there's other options for charging. Group event recording. Examples of festival, we talk about hometown days. As a feature where you can actually set it to if one person that's assigned to this festival activates a camera, every camera at the festival activates. So we're all coming out at the same time and recording multiple different viewpoints, vantage points of this festival, kind of like movie vantage point, if you're a movie buff like me. Notify you if battery's low on power. It has a display screen on the top of it where the officer can literally look down at it, and it also give them a warning if they're getting low. The detachable battery, which is an important thing, if you get held over, it might just be easier to just go in, grab a new battery, pop it in, put the other one on the charger. We talked about, area departments have watch guard. Oswego Police Department has the watch guard in car, and they actually just had their meeting Tuesday night to push their watch guard camera program. They're looking to do it. Montgomery PD already has watch guard. They've had it for about probably 2 years now, I want to say. So one of the recommendations was, you know, if you can get the same system the neighboring agencies have so you can share advice on troubleshooting and stuff like that. So it would be an advantage. And we already talked about the pre-event stuff. So the two different options here that I'll talk about, actually if you look at the quote breakdown, there's technically a third, but one's a capital expenditure, buying everything up front, and the other one's a pay-as-a-service, which is essentially a leasing program. So the first one I'll discuss is this V300 is a capital expenditure. That's their latest body camera. This, obviously, like I said, entails purchasing outright. The pros is you have a one-time payment, and it's a lower cost, not initial one payment. Or over time, I guess, if you look at it from a fiber standpoint. Cons, the storage is not cloud-based. It has to be stored on an internal server. And there's some things I'm going to go into, some things I've learned between internal storage and cloud-based storage. Talking to some IT people, obviously, I'm not a computer guru, so I'm kind of learning as I go what the differences are, what the pros and cons are. So I took some good notes, talked to some people that I trust and are knowledgeable. You must pay for the no-fault warranty in addition to the one-year manufacturer warranty, and that's 3 years at $450 per device. So you're looking at, if we were to get 33 devices, which is, this is just the high-end, 33 devices, one for each sworn officer, you're looking at $14,850 in warranty. And then years four and five is an additional cost, because it comes down a little bit, but you still, if you want that fourth and fifth year, you have to pay for that as well. There's no evidence library software, and I will get into the evidence library, the benefits of that. You must pay separately for a cloud service if you want to do cloud-based. So if you want to purchase outright all the hardware and own it, and you still want to do cloud-based storage, you have to pay a lot of money. It's $495 per device per year. So with 13 squad cars and, let's say, high-end 33 body cameras, looking at 46 devices, so you could see it be as high as $113,000 if you were to do the capital expenditure cloud-based. Cameras need to be replaced outside of warranty, you're buying a new camera. That's could be one of what I see as one of the drawbacks of owning the software. Not to mention the server. Servers, problems with the server, and now you're paying for server repairs and or replacements. And this does not include the redaction software. Redaction software is $49.95, and that gives us the redaction suite, which allows us to redact all video, whether it's a WatchGuard product or not. Any questions on that? I'm kind of going through quick, but I have a little more to say to kind of when I compared the two here. I took some good notes, as I said. So the pay-as-a-service program is essentially a leasing program. The pros, you get the unlimited cloud-based storage. This is unlimited for WatchGuard products. So all our in-car camera video and all our body camera video is unlimited cloud-based storage. You know, that's huge because it's their cloud-based program is CJIS compliant. You're not dealing with the on-site server. Those things are pretty important. As far as non-WatchGuard video, we can store, and I'll get into that when I get into the Command Central storage evidence library. If it's not a product of theirs, you get 50 gigabytes per device you own. So that'd be our body cameras, however many body cameras we had times 50 gigabytes. That's how much additional storage you have to store any media that, like a 911 audio call or an interview room video or a video someone sends you from the home security system. We could store those in the cloud too in this management system. But we're only covered up to whatever that extra storage is if it's not a WatchGuard product. So I don't know what the price is. It's something in my notes to look into if you had to purchase additional cloud-based storage. I can't imagine it's terribly expensive, but I do not have a price for you on that. If we decided to go full digital and stop putting things in evidence, if we reached our capacity, what is more storage cost? That's something I will look into and I can get you an answer on that. So.
Right, can I have one thing real
sure,
quick?
Sure, absolutely.
In the first one, if we go to purchase the equipment outright, we would also have that server that Ray had mentioned. We also have to have a backup to make it CJIS compliant, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah.
That means you have to have a secondary option to store all the data that's CJIS compliant. So you have to add costs onto that as well. If you do the other one, pay-as-you-go service with a lease type program, that's covered. They are CJIS compliant through WatchGuard. So.
The other pros is some of the more other pros of this is the devices are warranted throughout the program, and they're replaced at 3-year mark. So it's a 5-year lease program. After 3 years, they send you brand new cameras, all brand new cameras. So if we own 33, let's say max total, one for every officer, at the end of 3 years, they send us all 33 brand new cameras, and they're the latest model. So if we purchase the V300, which is their newest model, and they have the V500, let's say 3 years from now, we get V500s back. At the end of the program, at the end of the 5 years, we can choose to renew with them if we wanted to. If we were to renew with them, then we get new cameras again. And in 3 years, we get new cameras again. So you're constantly updating your technology and keeping it fresh and working order. So, and then the warranty is an important aspect of it too, because it's a no-fault warranty throughout the entire life of that contract. If an officer was to run a body camera over, all you got to do is scoop the serial number up off the ground and mail it to him and you get a new one. So everything's completely replaceable. It doesn't matter how the camera broke. Evidence library software, I will cover that on the next one. And in 5 years, what happens after 5 years? I covered as far as receiving new cameras, but we would renew if we decided we wanted to. If everything's going good, we renew another 5 years. We're just doing hardware now, so all the other stuff we already have, we probably just do the monthly fee per device, which right now is $49 per device. It was $89 last year, this time last year, per device, and they're talking about next year is possibly even going down to $39. I imagine as they do more and more business, these prices will come down on this leasing option because it's beneficial to everybody. The important thing is the question you gotta ask, if we decide to leave WatchGuard after 5 years, what happens to all our video? We keep it, they send it back to us, and they send it back to us in the format that it was stored in. So if you have a bunch of different videos from different sources all under one report number, we get it back in that same format. It's still in that structure where it's still in that report instead of just coming back in a massive file and everything's scattered, and now you have to go back and piece it back together over 5 years. You can imagine what a nightmare that would be. So that's in the contract. If you leave them, you keep everything, you get it back the way you had it. Cons, price, you pay over 5 years instead of a one upfront cost. Overall, it's a higher cost. There's some things I'm going to get into in the pros and cons where there's probably some hidden costs for the internal server that I just can't predict, right? And then there's possibly some cost savings with the internal server on the pay-as-a-service. So I will get into that soon. If nobody has any questions about the two programs, go ahead. Yes, Chris.
On this product, we've talked about, you know, the replacement of the warranty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a spec. I haven't looked up a spec. Impact resistance and durability, weather durability. You know, obviously, this is something that's been used around this area, so I don't have an issue with assuming that it's going to endure cold weather and not freeze, fail, have issues. But impact, I assume it's been tested for durability, for not catastrophic impact, but significant impact, it can still survive and keep reporting, I understand.
Yes, and I've heard conversations about it. I've been involved in conversations. I can get you, you know, some kind of certification to look at if you want, or whatever their spec sheet is on it. If that's, I'll make a note. Like I said, if there's anything I can't answer now, I will get you an answer. So
if we could,
okay.
I don't want it to be like a cell phone camera where you drop it in your shadows.
Right. No, these are very durable. I put my hands on them. They're solid.
The mounting device that it goes to, it's two different ways you can mount it. Obviously, if an officer's pursuing or they have to wrestle someone, that camera could come off the body very quickly. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I mentioned earlier about the fight that happened in downtown, and they had to wrestle with the guy, that the deputy's body camera fell right off. The nice thing about the pay-as-you-go service, the lease-type service, that thing breaks, we get a brand new one sent to us. If we purchase it outright, it's $895 to $1,000 that we have to pay for to get that. And so that's one of the pros of the lease program. Could it fog up? Sure. Possibly, yeah.
I have notes here, and I will find an answer. So, is everybody good up to this point? Okay. Command Central Evidence Library. So, what this is essentially is part of their cloud service and their pay-as-a-service, where it allows us to store all of our digital media in the cloud-based evidence management system. This is Microsoft Azure Cloud Service. I'm told that's a good service. Like I said, I'm not a computer guru, so if you are, it's CJIS compliant. That's the big thing. So, you know, they're taking our stuff into their cloud, they're backing it up for us, and they're providing the information security, which obviously CJIS is the Criminal Justice Information Service compliant. So that's what we look for, our in-house stuff, our leads. Any critical systems that have people's personal information have to be CJIS compliant, so that's a pretty important thing. It, like I said, it'll store all our YPD digital evidence. This would allow us to not have to burn CDs and DVDs. It would reduce workload for records personnel. Just some things that, you know, from talking to records, and I know this is an issue in the whole county, burning CDs. So if you, just so you understand what our process is now, we just have an in-car squad video right now, and let's say we bring that in, and we might have an incident with four officers, and we have to burn four DVDs, one for each squad car. That goes into evidence. If they need that for court, we have to take the four DVDs out of evidence, and in two copies per DVD, you have to go to the state's attorney's office, one for the prosecutor, one for the defense. So just to give you an idea, talking to records, they had a case last week where, for one case, they burned 56 DVDs to send to the state's attorney for one case.
And we're talking about, pays for the DVDs.
Yes. And so we're talking about, and when I get the judicial sharing, we're talking about sending a link now, and they're able to download the videos themselves, and it has every video from that case attached.
Other agencies do that. When I get stuff from DeKalb County, they send me a link.
Other counties are
huge.
Yeah. Other counties are way ahead of us.
Pictures, everything's on.
We are working with, I can tell you the police agencies in this county, that's what we're wanting to go to. With obviously there's some conversation in new technology, there's always going to be questions and maybe a little bit of pushback in from different people because they don't understand the technology. We are working through some of that now, but just not having to burn four DVDs, oh my God, the time that you're going to save for our record staff is huge. It's huge.
I was told they spend between 4 and 12 hours a week burning DVDs right now. So That's a lot of time. I don't imagine I'd get replaced with doing redactions. Maybe on a really bad week, but I think overall, the time savings is pretty incredible.
Here's the other thing with when it comes to DVDs, and I don't want to beat a dead horse to, a horse to death, but this has happened multiple times. Let's say we burn the 56 DVDs, we send it down there, and it gets lost. We have to burn 56 more CDs or DVDs. And that happens every single month. Every month it happens. So
so that's a bonus, obviously, the digital evidence management. Redaction software is included in this Command Central library. You know, we talked about redaction already, but like I said, the software can be used for any video recordings. We just talked about judicial sharing and the time savings from that. You know, one point to, as we're talking about this, a lot of counties are already going to the judicial sharing method. So, you know, if we were to buy the hardware up front and go that option and not have the cloud-based service with this Command Central, we may end up having to go purchase a separate system later to become compliant, and the whole county eventually goes to judicial sharing, which is going to happen. It's a matter of when. So this is included as part of the service, and we're not going to buy an outside service later down the road. I don't know what that's going to cost. I couldn't give you an answer on that, but you know, there's going to be some time to take our evidence, if we're still burning them on DVDs, and upload them to a server that sends them to the judiciary and defense. So yeah, you can the prosecutor. So you can see where this is. It gets complicated.
Tell me why you have to burn discs for the defense? When I read the disclosure rules, the prosecutor's out there.
I'm not going to comment on that. That's outside my good.
We'll have a conversation outside.
So, another important feature is citizen upload of videos and pictures. So, I can give you an example right now. So, we might go and somebody has, a lot of people have surveillance video on their house now, right? And we go to them and they have an incident we need, and they'll try to send it to us by phone and it doesn't work. Well, if they do that, it goes to our computer, and we still have to take it off our computer, and we have to burn a disk, and a lot of times it doesn't work, so then we have to drive over their house with a thumb drive and bring it in that way and still transfer it to a disk. What this allowed us to do is either through a QR code or some kind of web link, is they can directly send, that we create this link, they directly send their videos or pictures to our evidence management system, and it attaches it to that report, and it's done.
It's all in one place.
Done. Officers, same thing. So let's use an example. An officer goes to an ordinance violation. We get a lot of these. Let's say somebody's dog is going potty where it's not supposed to, a neighbor calls, and you need to take a picture of that for evidence for an ordinance hearing. You can take a picture of that with your department cell phone, upload it, and it attaches, and now when we, you know, appear here, we can bring that with us. Show the hearing officer, we have a picture. Now we're not taking an actual picture, putting it on a CD, and then trying to print the picture off later and bring it, or put it on a Xerox, whatever the case may be. So, you know, for me, this entire thing is kind of part of the paperless revolution that we're all going through in the world. Is I just look at is discs, DVDs, and CDs is another form of paper that we're trying to get rid of. We're trying to be all digital. I mentioned already unlimited storage for WatchGuard products and 50 gigabytes of additional storage per device for non-WatchGuard. Again, that's something I will get an answer for all of you, what additional storage might cost. But, you know, as me and Chief Jensen talked about, worst case scenario, if all our body camera and all our in-car camera is digital and it's in the cloud and we have to burn a couple DVDs or CDs, we're still saving ourselves and just an immense amount of time duplicating those things. So, but I, you know, I just deal with my cloud-based stuff for my iPhone, and you're buying additional cloud-based, it's not terribly expensive most of the time. But I'm not dealing with, obviously, terabytes, I'm dealing with gigabytes. So, I will find an answer out for that, because that's one of the things as I went over this today that I really want to answer for myself. So, I included two little graphics here, and so, these are from WatchGuard. I just kind of go through. The first one's from Citizen to Courtroom. And this is what I was talking to you about is, you know, your citizens can upload video, your officers upload video, you manage everything in your system. and then you can share it. And that's a big thing. Like we said, a link goes out to the prosecutor, and then they can send a link to the defense attorney. Done. And I appreciate Dan's already had experience with this. So you know what I'm talking about, how great it is.
Well, the WatchGuard, too, in my experience getting discs from different departments, we use different hardware. The WatchGuard's very easy to use. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times I have to look at a disc, and I don't know how to open it. There's right. all sorts of different files, and I have to spend 2 hours clicking on file after file after file after file. With the WatchGuard, you open it up and it plays. You
know, right, a lot of them come with embedded in the disc its own player to be able to play their video.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't know how to navigate that.
Right. And that's part of the problem, too, is you got to figure out how to open the disc. But with the WatchGuard, the disc already comes with the player installed. So from my experience with WatchGuard, it's just real user friendly.
That's it.
Second page, just another FOIA workflow, just kind of shows how a request might come in. You know, we can review it. Our redaction person does the redaction, and then that's saved in the system, and then they can send the video to somebody that requests that video. They can send that FOIA request by a link, same way we would send it to as a judicial sharing thing to the prosecution. And then that saves the person coming in here to do that. So that's what I have on the program. I kind of wanted to touch on some things. I've taken some notes, the difference between internal storage and cloud-based storage. So the two people I reached out to talk about this, one is Dan Pistawa, is our InterDev IT guy that's in here once a week. I talked to him about the different intricacies of internal storage and cloud-based, because I really don't know much about it, I'm just learning as I go. He says right now, you know, we have a couple terabytes downstairs of internal storage that we use. If we have to keep our body cameras, we're talking, I think it's 2 to 3 terabytes per officer per year that you need of storage. So we're looking at going from like 2 terabytes to, I think WatchGuard quoted, possibly need like 58. You know, I don't know what that's going to come out to later, but this is what the IT guys are telling me. He highly recommended cloud-based storage. He's been working with other agencies that have WatchGuard or another body camera service of Axon. And his suggestion is when you're dealing with something that's this large, that it's cloud-based rather than trying to deal with the large server spaces downstairs. He said some of the issues he's had with some agencies is that an internal storage and I can attest to this as an officer, their video's not uploading and they neglect to tell anybody, and then it starts backing up. And he said he's gone to an agency where he's literally had to manually upload a month's worth of videos from squad cars because their system was down and no one said anything or didn't realize it. So that's some of the issues with that, is dealing with the internal server. I also spoke with Joe Renzetti, who does the IT for Oswego Police Department. Now they went cloud-based on their WatchGuard in-car camera systems a little while ago, so he has some experience over the years dealing with the two things. He's the one that brought up the internal server and then needing off-site backup that's CJIS compliant, and that's a service you have to pay for. It's obviously not included in the quote. His estimation, a typical server lasts you about 4 years, and then could get 10 years out of it, you never know, but he said on average he thinks about 4 years, and then you're looking to replace a server, which is additional money that you didn't plan on. Some suggestions, said that WatchGuard offers the internal server with a 5-year warranty, and one of the things that he mentioned is that they rebrand another company's server, so their warranty is basically you're not going to have to pay for anything, but you have to contact this other company's support to get the server worked on, right? So he said it could kind of be an issue. As far as flow. Obviously you have more hardware on site, you have multiple access points, and the storage needs keep growing exponentially because the video we're moving into 4K, and as technology increases, the storage capacity needs increase as well. So, you know, I can't say what it's gonna look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but I imagine maybe technology gets better where they will compress stuff. I don't know enough about it, but you know, I know 4K is already out there in a lot of these systems. I know the in-car cameras and stuff, there's already 4K models out, so as the video, the resolution gets better, the storage needs are going to increase. So obviously then you're looking at what is my cost to expand my storage needs on my internal server. So those are some of the big points that I noted, the difference between internal storage and cloud-based. It seems both highly recommended cloud-based storage from their experiences, especially when we're dealing with, you know, this amount of storage. So does anybody have any questions on some of those things? We can now move into the price breakdown. Right. I know this is long, I thought it was a lot of work I put in, so bear with me here. So we priced out 25 and 33 devices. 25 allows us to have the extra ones on hand as officers come in and switch out, or if we get a critical incident and they have to come throw on a device. 33 is how you outfit every single sworn officer, right? That's our authorized strength right now. Elgin has 184 sworn. They bought one for everybody. They've got a ton of money, obviously, but they make sure every officer has one, and that's their camera that they deal with. They charge it. They take it home. They do whatever they need to do with it. They're responsible for it. So if you look down, I think the main thing is I took the quote they'd give me originally for 20 devices, and I took the different prices, and I just kind of extrapolated out. Sent it to the WatchGuard sales guy, and he kind of confirmed these prices are correct. They're pretty spot on. So one of the things that's important is you look at grant reimbursement, and we talked about that. So I talked to the Illinois Law Enforcement Training Standards Board. The grants only cover the hardware. It doesn't cover storage. It doesn't cover hiring additional personnel if you need them to deal with any body camera issues. There is talk that they're talking to the state to try to change the grant funding requirements so that some of those things will be covered. But I am told both from an IT individual and from Motorola, and I had a call in Gillespie. They did not get back to me. I read some news today that they're going through some turmoil. The grant funding, the way that they do the pay as a service is that they can front load the hardware costs on that contract, which allows you to then apply for the grant, still get the hardware costs covered, and still get the same amount. The issue with the grant is, you know, you want to look at a con of the grant is it's not guaranteed money. There's only a certain size pot for the grant, and you've got a lot of agencies applying for that money. You're not guaranteed the full $8.95 per device. You're not even guaranteed a dollar of that. And, you know, I'm not sure what their formula is for who gets it. I assume it would be need-based. So, you know, when we talk about grants, these are potential reimbursement amounts, but they're not guaranteed. So just wanted to kind of address that. So as you break down the service, you see that middle column, that's the V300. That's just the V300 if we were to, as a capital expenditure, buy all the hardware and then separately purchase the cloud-based storage. And you can see that is an extremely expensive option to try to do that. It's a non-starter. It doesn't make any sense. If you're going to go cloud-based, you might as well do the pay-as-a-service and get all the benefits of that program. So some of the differences, you look at the... sorry, I need to start wearing glasses. And I don't have anything. So getting old is a lot of fun. If you look at the differences, so as you can see, you have to purchase warranties separately if we purchase the equipment outright. If you wanted to have no-fault warranties, you can see, say, we'll take high-end 33 devices. We're looking at that, 14,850 in warranties, and then 10,890 in warranties just to get you in years 4 and 5 if you wanted to warranty for 2 more years. After that 5 years, they don't offer a warranty anymore for those body cameras. You just own them. If you don't purchase a warranty and they break, it's $995 at the moment to replace a body camera. The upload server, as you can see in there, there's a cost for the pays of service of $6,000. This is the server that allows the upload from our in-car cameras. It goes to the internal server we currently have and uploads it to the cloud, right? This $6,000 is probably significantly less because we already have the server. This is if you bought the entire server. Without IT and WatchGuard working together and looking at our current equipment, I can't say what that cost would be, but I imagine, I think we need 8 terabytes at max. So if there's an opportunity to take our existing server and with some minor upgrades and a minimal cost, get what we need to be able to download or upload the squad cameras. So that price could come down. I just don't have a solid number for you on that one. And then redaction software. We talked about redaction software. It's included in the pay-as-a-service. The other service, if we buy it outright as a capital expenditure, we have to pay $49.95. And then, you know, we have to purchase a computer to do the redaction software because they don't use Microsoft operating system. They use Linux, I think, L-I-N-U-X. Yeah, that sounds right. Linux. I'm not familiar with it, so I had to ask how you pronounce it. It's Linux. And then if you wanted a warranty on that tower, that's a 5-year warranty at $650. Then we're talking rack server. Now, this is their amount for their server. 58 terabytes is $14,265. Is that too much? Is it too little? I don't know. I really don't know. Probably going to need a lot. It seems light when you're talking, you know, I said 2 to 3 terabytes per officer per year. I've also heard as high as 4 terabytes. And as video quality goes up, it might even go much. So you're talking about a massive server to serve our video storage needs. Other than that, there's not a lot of difference in the two programs and in cost. That's where those are at. You know, as I said, let's say we take the 33 devices, we're looking at $95,790 for the program. If we were to be reimbursed the full amount of $29,535, you're looking at a cost to the city of $66,255. That's us buying all the hardware, owning it, and then we have to buy warranties, and then after that's done, if it breaks, we're done. We're buying new stuff again. Maybe we apply for new grants, maybe we get them, maybe we don't. I don't know. Those are all unknowns. The pay-as-a-service system, the total is $148,405 for 33 cameras. Assuming full grant funding, it reduces that to $118,870. And so the way that is, the contract is done is that as you pay your hardware costs up front. I think when I looked at the 20 cameras, it was around $32,000 is a one-time fee. And with this, annual fees are about $20,000 a year for the next 4 years after that to get to that point where you're in that pay-as-a-service mode and you're getting new cameras after 3 years, and then you just start a new contract every 5 if that's what you choose to do, and you get new cameras if you choose. So
you choose to renew the lease after 5 years, mm-hmm. You have to pay another upfront hardware costs, or because you already have the cameras, just pay for the services ongoing.
So you would pay for the service ongoing and what that rate is then. Like I said, it keeps coming down. But I can't say for sure, but I would imagine that we could possibly upfront those as a hardware cost again and maybe reapply for a grant again. I don't know. I can't say for sure. Those are questions I don't even know if I can get answered at this point, but I'd like to know. It's something I can't promise, but it's something I would, you know, we're always looking to save money somewhere. And that's, if we can apply for grants again, that's something I would definitely want to do, is after 5 years, get grant funding again and try to get new, you know, get new cameras. I mean, we're going to get them anyway.
Under the One Lease program, we signed that contract, we're supposed to get new cameras. There should be some cost savings in that amount, but what that cost saving is, we'll have to go on.
Well, and your transfer server's already built out, which is a smaller server than a storage server. Any hardware for charging stations, transfer stations, you already own that hardware. Obviously, it's hardware. If it breaks, you got to buy new stuff, right? We know that. So those are some costs. I mean, there's a lot of little costs here and there that I can't predict for sure.
You may save, may not.
Yeah. And my biggest thing is I don't know what internal storage is going to cost us long term. Right. I just don't. There's no way to predict it. Go ahead.
Something we're going to have to think about, and it's going to be a sunk cost for us, is probably needing a dual gigabit supply of internet connections at the new building. If we're going to have this much information that we're going cloud storage on, knowing the PD capacity, the city capacity, you know, obviously gigabits is easy for a single source, but when we're doing two, and then if we're having to transfer over to the courthouse or out to other agencies, we may be having to look at the additional cost for dual gigabit. I mean, it's going to be a reality. Okay. I know when the school district moved their administration offices over, they ran a direct line with Metro Nets from the district to the high school in order to have the capacity that
really they need to do what they need to do.
Yeah, so it's something we need to look at is the actual infrastructure.
Right.
So that we're not going to be backlogged on that.
So that's definitely something we can start looking into.
Yeah, something to do sooner than later.
And is that something you think we'd be doing, we should be doing anyway with this technology growth?
Absolutely, yeah. I think we need to be getting that way so that we can, if we're going to be moving into that building, everything's going digital, that's what we're talking about, we should probably look at making sure we're upsizing.
Prepare for it now.
Capacity.
So, I appreciate your input on that because these are the areas I know nothing about.
So one of the reasons that we wanted to meet today and present a lot of the information to you is that there's a lot here. And obviously there's quite a bit of money that's at stake here when we talk about implementing this program. So our goal today was to present you the information, to present you the initial numbers. We're going to be looking at finalizing what the actual numbers are going to be in a quote from our salesman saying, okay, let's just say we go with this now, what's it going to cost us? So we wanted to get the information to you guys right now, and then you guys have some time to think before our next meeting in January, and then what we would try to do is come back to this committee in January to say, of the three programs, what are you thinking? This is what the cost is going to be, because we're going to be in budget talks at that time, or we're really good into budget talks at that time, and that's going to kind of give us that direction of where we need to go into capital budget expenditures. The nice thing is we currently have, in FY22, $50,000 allocated towards a body camera program. Our goal was to try to get that body camera program instituted this year. The reason we didn't was the police reform bill and not knowing what that statute was going to be. So the 50 grand is there for current budget year, which obviously in talking to Rob and Bart, we can continue on into FY23, which would help offset some of the initial cost for the first year, and then we would have to pay so much money every year after that, if that makes sense. So that's kind of our goal, is to try to give you all the information and then hopefully in January get some clear direction from you guys on what we would, obviously what we would like to do, but then get direction from you, because let's face it, direction needs to come from you. So, see that smile, what's that look for?
We had Andy last night when we were talking about the sales tax and the excess and revisiting how that's allocated. And we actually just talked about basically putting the excess into possibly a special fund or reserve that's separated. So maybe we can find a place to allocate.
Yeah.
Well, that was quick.
Because this is something that we have to do.
Yes.
There's no other option. It's got to get done. And I think if you go around from different vendors with different products, the cost is going to be about the same.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I think you guys tell us what you are comfortable with, right?
You ask me that question, let's just say it's January, and you say, JJ, which one do you want? I'm going to say WatchGuard, the third option, pay-as-you-go. That is the one that provides the evidence library, provides the Red Action software, provides the unlimited storage. Ray's even looked into interview rooms. If we do in the new building, let's just say we build an interview room, we have interview rooms we're building, right? But we put the technology of WatchGuard in those rooms, it's unlimited storage because it's a WatchGuard product that we can use in here.
Right.
And so if you ask me today, I would say that's what I would be going for. Obviously, it's not the most expensive option, but it's the second most. The question is, do you feel comfortable buying it outright and then knowing you're going to pay, at the end? And so that's a lot. Again, it's a lot of information. I'm hoping you guys can sift through it, come up with some good questions that you may have, and then we can answer any questions you have in January and then kind of move forward. And like you said, it's statute. We're going to be forced to do this.
What type of time frame are you looking for to get this implemented? I know we've got now almost 3 years to do it.
Correct.
February 2025.
If my, in best case scenario, in a perfect world, I'd say I want to implement it May 1st. Partly because I want our guys to have body cameras. They want them. And there are so many cases and situations they're going on with the mental health calls that we are going on that I want the protection. I really do. Now, is it going to show us doing something wrong if we do something wrong? Well, yeah. And we're going to deal with that like we would in a professional manner, no matter what. But these protect us, and it protects the city.
I think most of the public wants it, too.
Hey, guys, to start, you guys can just start moving your old furniture into the building.
They're free up. Well, hold on a minute.
We're taking the cabinets.
But obviously, knowing May 1st is not, you know, a realistic option. We have to make sure, because this is such a big program, it affects every single sworn officer. And there's a very heavy financial impact on the city. We need to do it right, and we need to research it. We need to make sure that what we're doing is the right product, at the right time, at the right cost.
And so maybe January 2023, like a year plus from now.
Yeah, it could be. You know, if we get all the information and we work it through quick enough, you know, I may come to you and say, hey, I really want to, the first year, let's just say that first year is $50,000. Right? I may come in and say, hey, we want to start this program, we want to get on a contract, we want to purchase this. And it may take 2 or 3 or 4 months to get all the equipment, knowing how backed up companies can be. I don't foresee it going May 1st.
Well, implementation issues, right? We have to train all our officers.
Yeah.
To make sure everything's, do all the testing, make sure everything's running properly. I mean, this stuff takes time. We're doing it right now with our e-ticket. We're going through that very thing right now. In the test phase and identifying issues that where things that aren't working, we have to call support and they have to work into the code and everything else and fix the things. So that stuff happens, we know that.
That's what I was gonna ask is policy, training, how long is that time frame gonna be? You buy the equipment, you wait 3 months, you get the equipment, but then once you, you know, in that time frame, you've written the policies.
Right.
But training, you can do paper training, but to have them actually physically learn the material and understand it physically and to sign off on policy training. How long? I mean, are we 2-3 months to actually implement it throughout the entire thing?
So the policy in my mind is going to be very, very simple. And that's something I think we can get implemented within a month's period of time. But it's got to be that month really close to when we're going to actually implement the actual hard, you know, the hard equipment that you're putting. Because I think they need to see it, they need to read it, they need to be able to see it and touch it.
Yeah, they need to do
the
policy training and then the actual training of the equipment back to back.
Yes.
And then do a live implementation.
I would think from policy through hard implementation of, with all the equipment, probably going to be every bit of 3 months. Every bit of 3 months. So and a lot of that's going to be the training.
Maybe by 4th quarter of next year.
Potentially. And there's going to be things that have come up where guys are like, oh, I didn't hit this, right? We're going to have some of that stuff come up, but we're going to try to deal with that all in training. The more we can train with it, the better.
Hey, I know it was long, but I've been immersed in this for like a month or a couple months, so there's a lot of information. So if there's questions you think of afterwards, stop by my office, call me, email me, whatever, and I will try to get you answers to that stuff. So, and I kept some notes here, some answers that I'm already looking for. And I appreciate you listening to my very long-winded spiel. So, thank you.
Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty of questions.
I'm sure. I hope you do. It keeps me on my toes because it keeps me on my research. So I got to find this stuff out myself. I have to be the expert on this, right? That's the point. So, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. All right.
What do we do next?
So the monthly report, I think we'll start at the very top, right?
Then I guess we got to go back to number one, 2021-23, the monthly report review for July through September 2021.
So what I've done is I've broken down the three monthly reports. I can go through... Thank you. I can go through it like we would normally do. What I did is I combined the crime stats, some of the traffic stats and calls for service. I'll save that till the last one, because those are a combination and all of the numbers put together by month. So just real quick, in the July monthly report, you're going to see our overtime hours. A lot of our overtime has been reimbursed through reimbursements of overtime, like the water park, and then we had Haida CPAT, Haida CIT. So out of the 88 hours, we had 12, 17, 18, plus 18, so 36 hours of the 88 hours have been reimbursed. We also had 4th of July that month, and obviously that was a large amount of money in overtime, just because everybody's working on 4th of July. It's one of our largest events of the year. When you look at some of the community events, it was an extremely busy month with a lot of things going on. A lot of city events and a lot of lost dogs, and did a lot of presentations with schools, a lot of lemonade stands. So you can see a lot of pictures where our officers are getting out there in the public. One of the cool things was in July, we met with a young man named Keegan. He was a Boy Scout, and one of his projects was to talk about, you know, safety in the community, and it was about safety on the street, because they believe there was a lot of people speeding in the street. So we met with him, worked through our program with what we do to help reduce or help identify whether or not we in fact have a speeding problem. So it was actually kind of a cool thing. And we also lost our records supervisor, executive assistant, Nicole Decker. She retired, she had left employment with the city. And unless you have questions, I'll jump on to pretty much the same thing. In August, we had 81 hours of overtime. We had 56.5 reimbursed, which is always a good thing. Anytime you get that paid for, we had a ton of benefit time. We had 880 hours. Although in July we had 1,400 hours of benefit time used. It's obviously 4th of July and it's vacation month and things like that. A lot of special events as well. We had our special event with Gopher at Sports out of the Dome for our crisis intervention team, and working with special needs children in our community. So if you look through there, you're going to see a lot of community policing efforts there. We have almost 460 hours of training during the month of August. And then I'll go through the crime for the next month, unless you have questions for August. All right, so I'm going to skip all the way to the last section of the monthly report to our crime data. Again, there's a lot of community policing stuff, a lot of training hours, 327 hours. But the crime data is really one of the things I wanted to focus on here. Before I get to that, let me back up a little bit. One of the programs we've been doing now for the last 3 months, dealing with complaints and subdivisions, and you know you live in a good community when your complaints are traffic-related complaints like speeding and stop sign violations. So that's actually a very positive thing. But one of the things we've started to do with complaints specific to speeding on streets is we utilize our community service officers and our Citizens Police Academy to go out there and unmark cars with a radar gun. They will sit out there during periods of time when we know or we've had complaints of specific speeding times in a subdivision, and they'll monitor cars. And as a car comes by, they'll take the radar of that car. If it's over 10 miles an hour over, they'll mark down the time, the date, the license plate, and we send letters to those people saying, hey, listen, you were witness speeding on this date at this time. Please slow down. It's a residential zone. It's our way of trying to help identify whether or not we actually have a speeding problem on a roadway. I know EEI and our engineering firm does a lot of speed studies. That's huge. It gives us actual hardcore data we can utilize. But it's a way of utilizing resources that are important resources, but not the expense of an officer being out there to help us try to identify problems. We're also utilizing our portable speed signs a lot more. Guys purchased two of them for us last year, and they're out all the time. So jump into the crime reports. If I jump to offense summary part one crimes, currently we are at 201 crimes at the end of the month of September. At the end of 2020, we were at 444. So we're 243 less than what we were last year. We're averaging roughly 37. Or we did average in 2020, it was roughly 37 part one crimes a month. Our current average is 22. So we're projected to be 264 if you follow the averages, which would be 180 less Part 1 crimes. I will tell you that all of that is the theft. We had a lot of that theft last year where people's identifications were getting stolen and they were getting processed through the state of Illinois for unemployment claims. Those just happened to be Part 1 crimes, and that's really what that difference is. And then you break down Part 2 crimes. We are averaging, in 2020, we averaged 32 Part 2 crimes a month for a total of 381 Part 2 crimes in 2020. In 2021, we are averaging 29, so three less. And we're projected to be 348 as compared to 381, which is a decrease of 33 crimes. So if you look at our overall calls for service or our incidences, we are up, as of the end of that month of September, we are up 1,364 incidents through KenCom, which is huge. But our Part 1 and Part 2 crimes are down, which is good. So, you know, when you talk about how busy we are, and, you know, traffic just seems to be busy all the time. We've got some great highways in town, right? They've redone 47, they've redone 34. 47 is hopefully going to be redone north, but it's obviously goes south quite a ways. That also brings with it a lot of speed and a lot of, you know, cars that are flying through town. So the other thing I want to really make note of for the month of September is the squad car operation costs. Gasoline, you guys know, you guys deal with it on a personal level. So our gasoline costs, you know, our gasoline expense was up $1,900 in the month of September. We had 76 less gallons of gas as compared to the month previously, or September, I should say, 2021. But our increased cost per gallon was $1.08. So we are right now at the end of that month. You know, we keep track of our budget, where we're at in gasoline expenditures. If we average out for the remainder part of the year, we are going to be right at budget. But we know we're going to go way over that because gas prices continue to go up. So we're obviously looking at ways that we can reduce costs in other areas and other accounts to make sure we can help offset what that cost is going to be. But when we go to budget talks next year, you're going to see a significant increase in our gas expenditures based on what the energy department is saying where gas is going to go, where we're seeing gas is gone, and just, you know, you're obviously going to try to budget the best you can. So I'll take any questions on monthly reports.
Nothing for me.
All right.
Much more interesting to read yours than administration.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not, Seymour. All right, I'll go on to adjudication reports if you'd like.
All right, PS 2021-24.
All right, our adjudication reports, you guys see that there's 7 months, several Mondays there. I'm only going to point out a few of them. A lot of them are your impound vehicles, your cannabis expense, you know, charges that we've had. If not, well, I should say most, if not all, cannabis charges are the person's either under 21 years of age in possession or they're in a vehicle where they're doing it. You know, I was asked the question, well, why so many cannabis charges? Well, that's the reason why. You can't possess it when you're under 21.
And, or
exactly. I'm sorry. Exactly. So that's kind of the reason for that. We did have a fireworks complaint, if you look at the August 2nd, and, you know, it just kind of is what it is. Sometimes the fireworks ones, you know, you get calls. 4th of July is rough, and you guys know how that goes. We did have a few vehicle off-street parking citations that were issued in the month of August. The reasons those were issued is it was a place that we've had common problems, common complaints. They're parking on the front yard, tearing up the parkway. So we did issue a few of those citations for that. Fast forward a little bit into the docket of September 8th. You're going to see a couple curfew violations there. Part of that is whenever we have a curfew violation, we always notify the parents. The parents in this case here, we issued two curfew violations. The parents were extremely supportive. But this is something that we need to do simply because we can't just let a kid go. If we let a kid go past curfew, and they get hurt, there's liability on the police department and the officers, number one. And number two, we want to make sure the kid gets home safe. And after curfew, their license is not valid at a certain age. So you're going to see a few curfew violations. There are a few other improper parking on roadways and things like that. Some of those tickets were dismissed because we had compliance with things. We had an issue off of Worsley Street. We've been working with that gentleman for a very long time. Even before I came in as chief of Yorkville, there had been some issues. We went down and had some conversations, Deputy Chief Nikolasic and myself. The gentleman was actually very nice with us. So you're going to see a few tickets that, you know, were issued that we don't typically issue, but we did dismiss those tickets because we got compliance, which is what we were looking for. You're also going to see several alcohol violations. We did our alcohol stings throughout the year and had several working with the mayor on that. And let's see, I think you're going to see a person, one that I don't know if I've ever seen, but a person smoking cigarettes inside a city-owned operated building. We had a gentleman come in that was extremely upset with us. He was intoxicated. He's a registered sex offender. He didn't like that he got charged with violating as a registered sex offender, so he decided to argue with our people and light up right in our lobby. Detective Sergeant McMahon handled that with a lot of professionalism and patience. And so, again, just kind of a different one you're not used to seeing when it comes to that. So, that's all for adjudication.
Thank you. We're going to move on to PS 2021-26. The introduction, assignment, and responsibility of Commander Carlisle.
So, obviously, you guys were at the board meeting when he was promoted. So, Garrett is going to be working an altered shift. He's going to be working later, early afternoon, late morning, into the late evening hours, usually between 10 and midnight. He has a flexible schedule, so whatever he decides to work, but our agreement is typically he needs to be around for our nighttime people as a command staff. He's going to be working directly with Deputy Chief Nikolasic in the Field Operations Division. He's going to take over a lot of different responsibilities that Deputy Chief Nikolasic is responsible for. Part of that is to free up DC Nikolasic because at the end of, actually we're going to be budgeting for it this next budget year, we're going to start looking into state accreditation, which is professionalizing our department, professionalizing our police department, and hopefully bringing some very positive things in, not only training and professionalizing our department, but to our staff. And Ray is going to be responsible for the accreditation process. That's probably not going to take place till we get into our new building. Our current building, we can't meet some of the standards, but in the new building, we absolutely will be. So Garrett's going to be taking over a lot of the traffic complaints. He's going to be taking over some of the FTO programs. And as you guys, you've met him, he's amazing.
Yeah, he's great for
it. Yeah, he absolutely is. So
who's taking over? I mean, he was the point man for the crisis intervention.
So Bear and Garrett will continue to do that. Garrett and Bear, it's close to Bear's heart, and he was the one when I first came in that approached me with the first program that he wanted to do, and that was CIT. And he doesn't want to ever let it go, which is great. You want that passion, right? And so he does an outstanding. He and Garrett work so well together. And Garrett is, like I said at the meeting, he's one of the best communicators I think I've ever seen. So he's. So yeah, they're going to maintain that.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Is he on duty right now?
He should be. Yeah.
Is he not here? Did you?
7:30. 7:30. Yeah, he should be here. He should be.
And then we've got one more item on the agenda that is 2021-27, a meeting schedule for next year. We want to keep the...
Looks good to me.
Okay. Keep the schedule as we have for the last year plus, right? 2 years now we've had the schedule. What about Mr. Merrick? Does he have any input on this?
Hey, Matt? Oop, let me turn you up a little bit here. Any questions or issues with the meeting schedule for 2022?
There you go.
It's good. Dan's shaking his head up and down.
That takes
so is Seaver.
That takes care of our agenda items. Do we have any old business that needs to be addressed this evening?
No.
Do we have any additional business that needs to be addressed this evening? No?
For me.
Okay. Then I think we can adjourn tonight's special public safety committee meeting. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for body counts.
Thanks, Matt.
All right.
You too, buddy.
See you Tuesday, Matt.